You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith. We look at all of those, try to make sense of them, and not that one is easier than the other. Right. Father Thomas Loya will help us this afternoon. He'll be with us for a couple of segments, and we'll talk about this recent podcast on this video. I guess it's a YouTube video show, which really kind of is becoming television anyway, right? That's how we're consuming. More and more consumers are consuming their entertainment is through streaming. And so the YouTube program, pretty big for the host, Dave Rubin, the Rubin Report, and Bishop Robert Barron, a host, and some interesting dynamics that came from that conversation and backlash, unexpected backlash, I think. We'll talk about that with Father Thomas this afternoon. Also, more interesting dynamics in the Trump administration, now with evidence that there were talks, conversations, communications throughout the campaign with Russia. This has been assumed for some time. Asking the questions, I think what the question we should be asking is one that I haven't heard asked yet, is just why? Why are we having these conversations? What is this all about? Why is Russia so interested in what America is doing? Why is Trump so interested in what Russia is doing? I've got some theories. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya, TaborLife.org, joining us. Father, welcome.
Thank you, Leo. Well, it's good to be here.
Well, we didn't get to catch up last week, and a lot rapidly happening in the world all over the place with all kinds of interesting things, but a couple of things that we want to focus on, and one in particular to start. Bishop Robert Barron was invited onto a YouTube platform, the Rubin Report, which this gentleman has a pretty large following on YouTube as a YouTube kind of a talk show, if you will, almost a Tonight Show. I don't know. He sent down in this interview forum. The gentleman is a very fair, I think very balanced interviewer, but undoubtedly homosexual and in a homosexual marriage. And then Bishop Barron, of all people, decide to go and to honor his request to be a guest. And it goes and has a pretty interesting conversation with the guy.
Yes, he does. And it's interesting because Bishop Barron, it's good that he went there. You know, I think that's what we have to do, you know. And
Not everybody thinks that, though, Father, as well, you know.
Well, you know, it reminds me of, I understand how they might think that. But, you know, at the same time, I think of the story of Zacchaeus, Christ coming upon Zacchaeus up in the tree, you know, and Zacchaeus runs up in the tree, wants to see Christ. Christ sees him and says, hey, come down from here, Zacchaeus. I want to dinner with you tonight. You have to remember, Zacchaeus was a tax collector. That was like the slime of the earth at that time, that culture, you know. And here's Jesus Christ in front of this crowd saying, I want to be with you tonight in your house. I want dinner with you. Yeah. And of course, Zacchaeus he invites him in, and then he converts you know, so on. So I think we have certainly a precedent there by Jesus Christ, you know, that we have to go, and and this is what I think Pope Francis is just trying to encourage too, that crossing that chasm, at least finding some place where we can dialogue. You know, Leo, one time on radio a few years ago, I spoke with a man who was, he was an atheist. I forget what his name was now. He was a scientist, and he kind of became well known for a while because he was originally, I think, he grew up as his background was Lutheran, but he became an atheist, and he was desecrating the Eucharist. And in fact, he was doing it on the internet. He even asked for people to go out and get consecrated hosts so he could do it purposely. You know, it was like a real super over the top in your face. And I did ask to have him on my radio program, wanted to interview him, and he consented, and we had a very good conversation. And of course, I was some people chastised me for that. Even some people that were very supportive of me that I really respect was like, "And we're fine, all that." Yeah, I understood. But what the interesting thing was, Leo, is that afterward, I received these affirmative responses from some of his friends, some of his atheist friends. And they said that was the first time, and they call us theists, you know, that was the first time a theist ever spoke with them respectfully. And they explained about, you know, what their basic experience was. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I didn't accomplish my mission totally. Of course, I wanted to talk to him to make some kind of connection and maybe hopefully urge him not to. I wasn't trying to convert him to. I didn't think I could convert him to believing in God on the spot, but I at least wanted to have him think twice about desecrating the Eucharist. You know, I wanted, like anybody else, I didn't want to see that happen. But the thing is, there was a certain mission accomplished in that we made a connection. You know, I was kind of doing the Pope Francis thing before there was a Pope Francis.
Sure.
And I think there was a positive fruit of it. And it's where we have to go, because so oftentimes, let's face it, people can be enemies when they really don't know each other on the level of persons. And here I draw upon, once again, that brilliant principle of St. John Paul II, the personalistic norm, that you've got to always bring things to the level of the person. These are persons. And even though we don't agree with them, whatever, it's not honoring them by going on an interview with them or my connecting with this atheist. My point was not to honor him at all, to respect him, but also to try to appeal to him. And how else can you do that unless you engage them? There has to be some kind of engagement, just as Christ did. So with the Bishop Barron interview, what he did was he engaged this person, and the point that was very controversial was Bishop Barron mentioned, he said that, he doesn't agree with the Supreme Court's decision to allow so-called homosexual marriage, but he said, I'm quoting him, is, "I don't think I want to press it further. I don't think we are right. I don't think we are right now he says, "I'll apply the Aquinas principle. I think it would probably cause much more problems and dissension difficulty if we keep pressing." In other words, he was saying, "I wouldn't press to overturn that right now." Right. And of course, that was the controversial part. And Bishop Barron, later on his own Facebook like that, came and made a clarification on that to make sure there was no doubt. But some people still were up in arms. One of them was our friend Joe Siambra. He was quoted as, "I like Joe, he's a friend of mine. I think he's a courageous guy doing a lot of good work." But he brought up some points that are, again, interesting. But I think what's important here, Leo, is that it was very similar to what we were talking about with the pro-life movement, in the women's centers and so on, that are the effort, and this is what Bishop Barron is trying to say, is where do we put the effort? Where will the effort produce the most good, and where will it maybe produce not so much good? And I think this is the point he was making, that, in fact, he said that, he actually said in his interview, he said that, I'll quote him right here, he said, "Placing our sex lives under the lordship of Jesus matters, but I fear that for so many people in the secular world today, religion is reduced to the policing of sexual behavior, and this is massively unfortunate." He said that, "I believe that given the present climate, it is best to oppose it through personal witness and education." And I think that's the key. That's the key answer. Would I like to see such laws overturned? Even in Roe versus Wade, yes, and that's really not the point of the question. The point is, what would be the best thing to do right now? And what Bishop Barron was saying is something we were saying before with this whole pro-life movement, is the best thing is to work on the level of that personal conversion and the education and the awareness. And you can't do that unless you engage a person, whether it's a person that's interviewing you or a person on the street, someone you know at work, at home, whatever. There has to be that engagement, that point of contact. Because first of all, on the level of persons, you know, you can't, it's much harder to call names and to be at odds with someone when they're just a name or something remote. But when they're in your presence and you're treating them as a person, there's an exchange level of the persons, it becomes a whole different thing, you know, a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. And one that has some kind of hope, some kind of a possibility to it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that personalistic norm, as you mentioned, there's dignity, there's tremendous dignity there when you're actually willing to go one-to-one and say, let's look at this individual for who they are. And I think we can do that on multiple levels, whether it's atheists, whether it's homosexuals, whether it's pro-choicers, pro-aborts, whether it's those who would maybe be feared because we assume that they're up to no good because of their faith being not ours, you name it. I mean, there's a number of these levels that if we were ever just to decide to get beyond the perception, the stereotypes, the rhetoric and all of this, to boil it down to approaching someone on the level of dignity first and foremost, amazing things can happen. Because a couple of things are going to happen, as we see already in this Rubin Report, Dave Rubin, the host, who kind of had this response to Bishop Barron, like, I'm not used to people treating me like this. And even his followers and watchers, those who are his viewers on YouTube, felt the same. There's a melting that is happening now between,
right,
I think, some of us who would watch this and maybe understand the humanity and the dignity of Rubin, if perhaps you were challenged by that to begin with. I won for not, but there could be those who would be. But then the other side of those, like you say, that they see a theist for the first time in a light they've never seen, right? Because all they're used to is this constant, what they assume is just some sort of opposition. And for someone to be fair, to sit down and be fair, to be frank and cordial, this is something that is refreshing on a number of levels. And I think we've got to have more of that. I think, you know, you're going to get those like Chambra, who you mentioned, who will see this as some sort of enabling. But I think the good that comes, as I'm sure that there were those who, when Zacchaeus came down from the tree, they're thinking, you're just enabling this guy and what he's up to, as opposed to seeing what could potentially come of this, which is transformation on both sides of this equation. That is what we got to work toward. I mean, that's where it's exciting. And just a less than a minute left in this segment, but I'll let you respond to that.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe we'll talk about after the break something that Joe brought up that is a couple worthy points I think we could look at. And they're not worthy in terms of disagreeing with Bishop Barron. They're worthy in terms of this whole discussion about the same-sex issue.
Yeah. Well, it's not you can respect someone's dignity in every possible way and not affirm and condone every ounce of their behavior. I mean, and I think that to be able to draw that distinction is very important, especially this day and age, and especially as we try to work to be evangelists. We're right up against a break. We're going to come back. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon. Tabor Life, more to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya with us. Welcome back.
Thank you, Leo. Good to be back.
And talking before the break about, I think the bigger picture of just the common decency that can be there when we treat people like people and we begin to open up channels of dialogue and really understand each other. And there's a lack, a great lack of that on so many levels, as we know, and we're referring specifically to the Bishop Barron and Dave Rubin is the gentleman's name, the Rubin Report interview. But what's unfortunate, I think the most unfortunate thing is that when you do that, when you're just fair, and when you really want to sincerely create opportunities of dialogue and conversion opportunities, it's got to be criticized by...
No, you know, Leo, this is, I'll tell you, for those who are, you know, upset with Pope Francis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to use terms and labels like that, but just for the sake of our discussion, I'll say it's the, I'll qualify it, so-called, you know, conservative mm-hmm. Catholic, you know, very
right,
faithful.
Sure. Right.
Okay, well, they have to understand that this is, they're creating their own difficulties with Pope Francis, because this is exactly what he's trying to address, that you can't do this and expect any kind of real progress, any kind of real evangelization.
Right.
And that's why he keeps coming out and using these words like the rigid people and all that, which, mm-hmm. you know, I know I kind of went to some of the stuff like in that regard too, but at the same time, I understand what he's saying, because I know I have, I think you have too. I've been victims of them myself.
Yeah, sure.
Where here you take a person like Bishop Robert Barron, who can't be, I mean, he's a friend of mine. I know him. He knows me. And I'm very humbled and proud to say that, actually, because, you know, he was here in Illinois. We've shared venues together and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And, you know, he's like, I'll use his tongue in cheek. He's Captain Catholic himself. You
oh,
know?
Believe me, yeah. Yeah. I've
how
met him.
You possibly,
no.
Yeah,
Orthodox.
How could you possibly think for one second he's going to do something that sells out the church or enables, you know?
Yeah.
He's not. But what he did was something just exactly what we ought to be doing. And I'll tell you, when you do that, here's what's happening. And here's what I try to do, and I try to advise too. And I shared this story before, like, you know, in the pro life stuff. You know, as we're standing there protesting for pro life, you know, then we go and I actually go into the jaws of the lion. I go into the you know, our opponents. They're standing mm-hmm. there screaming at us, and I go into them to try to meet with them, dialogue. And well, what happened? The dynamic is this: is that you come to that point where, what I like to say, you try to get into people's sacred cows. In other words, what is it that they're really, really holding dear? And when you get down to it, everybody wants the same thing. In terms, like if Barron would have reversed Bishop Barron would have reversed the interview and said to Mr. Rubin, okay, what is it you? Why do you want same-sex marriage? What is it? Well, he would have said he would have said something like love or companionship or anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He would have said something that would speak to the common human yearning. It's just that how we get there, because of what happened to us like that, can be in these disordered ways and not the honest way. In other words, what you tell a person, basically, I think, what we have to be doing is saying, you know what, you and I, we kind of want the same thing. Basically, we want the same thing, but there's actually a better way to achieve that, to get the real thing. And I think that's, to me, that's what goes on. There's a possibility for that to go on, and that's where the real meeting point is. When you do dare to cross that chasm, to cross that aisle, you know, and to do that accompanying that, you know, let's face it, let's work it all down. We're both human. We both have the same yearnings. It's just that how we've come to understand that and experience that and seek that is where the difference is. And yeah, those differences can be where people are living in what we'd say, you know, disordered, sinful, perverted ways, whatever. No, they're self-destructive, whatever. But underneath it, what they're still yearning for is the salving of a wound. They want to be loved. And this is what I mean by going back now, touching on Joe Sharma brought up one point, which is nothing to do with Bishop Barron, just a point about this whole discussion. There was one thing he did touch on, using even this term gay, that and courage is very big on this too, which is wonderful. You don't, the starting point is not that you're gay. The starting point is you're a person. You know, you're a person in need of love and respect at all times. and to be walked with, to be accompanied with, and to see, you know, what is it you're looking for? What is it where are you hurting? How can we then look at maybe better ways to achieve the desires that you want, which are common to human beings? You know, we don't want to be hurt. We want our hurts to be healed, and we want to be loved. It's just what happens to us along the way is what determines our choices, and our choices can be, disordered or self-destructive, and therefore not good for society, or they can be healthy ones. But you can't help a person choose the right way unless you first communicate to them that, I think I understand what it is you're feeling, you're hurting from, what you're desiring. And so this is another reason why that on that deep level, the person that I think what Bishop Barron did was very exemplary, where we have to go. I think that's what Christ did, He was with the tax collectors and the prostitutes and something like that. It never enabled them, just like the woman when he said, has anyone condemned you? No, I haven't condemned you, but don't sin anymore. So he met her, but then he also pointed out a better way for her. And I think that's the key. Let's meet the people and point to a better way.
And I think that way can be pointed to even as subtly as just treating them like a human person. As crazy as that sounds, there's something beautiful that can come from that. And, we're talking about the reaction, of course, that can come from this. And what is astoundingly unfortunate and just to see this, the plank in the eye versus the speck analogy that parable that Jesus teaches is that, with this reaction to people just being who they are, maybe living a lifestyle you don't agree with, that the reaction to the indignity, the by being overly reactive,
yes,
that you then treat this individual with a lack of dignity and you become undignified yourself in that reaction because you think you're so virtuous that you have to be this culture warrior and fight so hard against this, it spins this into vice. And now you're on a vicious side of the cycle now.
Yes.
And we just don't see that, which opens up another discussion, and we got a little bit of time left, but I think it's worth exploring. There are those who are so concerned now that Pope Francis is on some sort of collision course with the church, that now we're going to open up for women priests and all of this, which all because of this Amoris Laetitia internal forum suggestion, really, is what it is, that says, maybe pastors have a little bit more pastoral sensibility. That's all he's suggesting. And now it's assumed, all bets are off and everything's out the window.
Right.
We've lost our moral compass because how dare the Holy Father suggest that pastors be pastors? It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. And speaking as a pastor, I don't know if people remember, Leo, but early on, Pope Francis would say things like, it's for the theologians to hash out whatever.
Right.
I think part of what he does on that pastoral level is he does throw like meat out there. He takes the meat that all of us pastors are chewing on, and he throws it out there for everyone else to start chewing on.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost like coming to the aid of us pastors. Like,
right.
We're on the front lines here in the deep, dark secrets of persons on one-on-one. I mean, you go deep with a person when you're a priest.
I bet.
As deep as you can possibly go, Leo. And you do it with every person. It's basically like an internal forum, And when you go that deep, it's like there's no one that can judge these things. It's truly, truly between you, that person, the priest, the person, and God. And it's nothing. There are times when you come to that point where you actually tell someone, okay, I'm going to tell this to you, but it's only for you. And I'm not talking about moral relativism. I am not a moral relativist. I am fiercely loyal to the church's teaching. But as a pastor, when you're trying to connect, we have to remember, we're trying to connect a soul with God. This is what it is. And where you have to go with that is sometimes a place that is so deep, so dark, so mysterious, and so unique to the person that you know you come to a point sometimes where this is the only way that connection can be made for this person.
Mm-hmm.
And you, as a pastor, you go for it with fear and trepidation that you're doing the right thing, you're not enabling whatever. And I can't emphasize enough, believe me, I'm not talking about a willy-nilly careless use of internal form or multiple relatives at all.
Right.
I'm just saying that there is a place you go with a human soul that just doesn't necessarily fit so perfectly into what we might think are the perfect categories.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of clear,
no,
Leo?
It's abundantly clear to me because I've been on the other side of that confessional. And I know, and we're almost out of time, Father, but you know, but I think all of this is the same theme, and it's really understanding that there's a uniqueness to the person, and if we believe, as the pro-lifers always chant, that this is unique, unrepeatable human life, well, there's something about that uniqueness of each human life that has to be treated in a very personal and unique fashion. And when we get to that point, when we're actually treating people like humans with all the dignity afforded to them, that's when amazing things can happen. Until then, we're spinning a lot of wheels and we're just we're getting nowhere. Father, we're out of time, but we got to leave it there. We'll talk again next time. God bless you. Thank you so much. Father Thomas Loya, Tabor Life. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 Minutes every afternoon. More and more interesting things happening every day. And, of course, now with General Flynn being out after resigning with apparently evidence of some sort of Russian communication during the campaign. And this could be seen as somewhat treasonous, especially when we were enacting sanctions on Russia, especially with the Crimea situation and the Syrian involvement, all of this kind of making this a much more challenging dynamic all around. Now, we know there's been a lot of Russian stuff. What's going on? Why are we even interested? What's happening? And that's the question I don't think that has really been asked in all of this enough. And I think if we look at, I don't know, who am I, right? I'm no political scientist. I'm no policy analyst. I'm a guy who has been in media for a long time and has kind of learned to go, I see some dots. And that's what people hate about reporters, by the way, because we see dots and we start connecting dots. We're like, oh, wait a minute. Okay. So could this be connected to that? And sometimes they're not when we dig down into them. But when we dig in and we discover that they are, well, there's some very interesting dynamics at play. Here's what I've said. I've said it for a long time, and I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I've said it. That's all. I haven't investigated. I have nothing other than speculation based on what I see happening, that this is where this is all going. And that is, we've got Siberia with what is assumed to be the largest oil reserves in the entire globe. We've got Russia, who would be more than willing to export that to the U.S. and completely cut off any sort of Middle Eastern oil supply that would ever, ever occur. So we get the biggest global company CEO as our Secretary of State for a reason, right? Who already has Russian business dealings. So this is a business deal. It's just a big business deal. It's not really treason. It's not really state secrets. It's kind of what I said from the beginning. It's there. there's something about career politicians that I happen to like. Now, you may disagree with me and think, well, Leo, you're just a big government guy. You're a globalist anyway. Of course, that's what you would think. But look at how we generally, before somebody's running a company, before somebody gets to that level of CEO status, oftentimes they started in the mailroom on an internship in college. And they ended up learning every aspect of that business from the bottom up. Now, maybe what they're really, really good at is being a CEO, but at least they know every interworking of that. And they may not be able to go back and perform as well as the mailroom. It's kind of like undercover boss, right? The boss goes down to the lower levels and he's terrible, because what he's really good at is calling shots, making decisions, but knowing how every cog fits together. That's his forte. But it's his forte because he's been through that chain and he understands it so incredibly well. So there's something to be said, I believe, for those politicians who have won a few local elections, served a few city and state positions, moved from there on to other positions of prominence and positions, and then after at least a couple of decades, right, at least a couple of decades of that, they've gotten to the point now where they're prepared to take a larger office. That larger office may be senator, could be governor, could be president, depending on how much time they've really served and what they really know about the inner workings of politics. Because I promise you, there are inner workings of politics that, if it's done well, can yield amazing, amazing outcomes. Because you know how to do this, because you've understood the dynamics, you've been in those positions, you've served in the other offices. And because you understand how this can work, then you work the system to make it work for you and your constituents and those who support you. But if we were to bring a manufacturing CEO into the grocery store, to run the grocery store, and we just decided tomorrow to oust the grocery store manager, and we're going to put a manufacturing guy in there because he's been super efficient and he's been able to make this manufacturing thing work. And all he knows is manufacturing, and he knows nothing about grocery stuff. What's he going to do? He's going to put the heavy stuff at the front. We'll get it off the truck, we get it up here. Then we can break it down and we can move it. Not that I know anything about either of these industries. I'm just saying there are logical things that you do in one place that you don't do in the other. Because, hey, we unload the trucks here, we get this stuff up here, and then we're going to move it back here. And this is how, you know, it's a manufacturing, it's a chain of process to get. It's not, oh, well, we put the fresh stuff up front because this is where our consumers come in and this is where they shop first, is in this fresh vegetable area. We don't think about consumer behavior. We don't think about anything other than this is how we've done it in our world. Therefore, we're going to apply our world. We're going to overlay our world onto this world. And it doesn't work that way. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And everyone was like, well, we got an outsider, a businessman, and he's going to run this the way it's supposed to be run. Well, not necessarily, because there are ways that you do things politically that you don't do in business. When you got a CEO, he's a CEO. He's calling the shots. It's what he does. And if he wants to pick up the phone and talk to somebody in Russia or wherever across the globe, that's okay, because it's his business and it's his business. It's not national security at risk. It's not the business of the United States. It's not a balance of power that you have other areas that you have to somewhat defer to or suffer consequences, because the consequences could be that the judiciary is going to come back to bite you, as well as could the legislative. So at least being in this for a lot of years can season someone to the point of being able to make astute decisions based on experience and knowing how to manage this. I just don't think that that's what we're seeing now. But again, the big question, and maybe it just needs to be spelled out. Someone needs to just say, look, Russia's got resources big time. They're the biggest landmass country on the face of the planet. Partnering with them is smart because now we have opportunities that we wouldn't have. And unlike the Middle East, where we're talking to Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Iran and you name it, all of these different, and oftentimes at odds with one another countries, we got a big landmass that is at least by and large unified. So obviously that's strategic. It would be strategic. And I think if it's explained, first off, I know Trump supporters, they don't care, right? You're going to support anything he does anyway. But I think even those who may oppose, if it's spelled out to say, look, we need to reduce the dependence on oil in the Middle East. We've been at this game for too long. OPEC has controlled this, and we know that we can do better. We can do better for the American people because, you know what? We're going to get gas back down to 50 cents a gallon because we're going to partner with Russia and they're going to be our exclusive distributor. And our deal is going to be so strong that there's no way anyone else could touch it. We're going to make it happen. Cheap gas, once again, making America great. Now, Trump opponents may still find problems with some of that, but when it comes down to an economic sense of, well, we're going to cut gas down by an eighth of the price, and now everything gets cheaper and better and more efficient. And, oh, and by the way, while we're doing that, we're going to work on alternative fuel sources together, us and Russia. How about that? We've already signed that agreement. Now we're going, okay, wait a minute. So this global community thing is actually helping this American community, and this makes sense. But if we're bulldozing and we're pushing through and we're keeping secrets and we're seemingly hiding things that look like it's bigger than what it is when it's really not, look, we're just trying to get a business deal going here. I've been working on this for a lot of months. My guys, yeah, they called. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tillerson, he's out there. He's been dealing with Russia for a long time. He speaks the language. He knows what's up. We're going to knock this thing out of the park, and it's going to be good for you because how about this? When you're paying 50 cents a gallon, which you haven't done in 40 years, it's going to change everything. The economic impact of that is going to make your cars cheaper. It's going to make your produce cheaper, everything. And then that 20% tariff on foreign purchases that have to be passed on to the consumer, it's going to be completely outweighed by this. That's what I'm working on. Okay. So let's do this. We're not having that kind of disclosure. Now it just looks like what the heck is up. This looks secretive. It looks traitorous, treasonous. What's happening? So it's a bizarre dynamic. But again, I think there's something about politicians knowing how to sell themselves politically that we don't have in this dynamic, obviously. And then, of course, the press just reporting truth, accused of untruths, and then twisted stories coming out all around. It's crazy. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.